The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
President Trump fires back.
Is it subversion? Is it treason?
Senators fight over releasing Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's records.
You want to give up your emails right now? Make them public? I don't think you do.
And later, remembering Burt Reynolds.
Sorry, I don't want to get married.
Terrific. That makes two of us.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with a Russia probe and new developments in the president's response to special counsel Robert Mueller.
The president's legal spokesman tells CBS News that Mr. Trump would be willing to give answers to written questions submitted in advance for review by his attorneys if they touch exclusively on his campaign's dealings with Russia. As for anything beyond that, Rudy Giuliani only says, let's see how the first round goes. For now, he tells CBS News there's no commitment from the president to answer any questions touching on whether he's obstructed justice while in office.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. The White House is also trying to root out the anonymous senior administration official who wrote a scathing op-ed about President Trump in the New York Times as Mr. Trump lashes out at the person and the media.
Is it subversion? Is it treason?
President Trump continued on the war path he has paved against the New York Times for publishing an op-ed it says was written by a senior administration official.
For the sake of our national security, the New York Times should publish his name at once. I think their reporters should go and investigate who it is.
The anonymous piece paints a stunning picture of what the author describes as anti-Trump resistance inside the White House, claiming he's among those working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. In Washington, the revelation set off a wild guessing game.
The vice president, that was my first thought.
And a flurry of denials from the president's inner circle.
I think it's a disgrace.
It's not mine.
Did you write that op-ed?
No.
Nearly every cabinet member issued a statement to cross their name off the list of potential suspects, noticeably missing Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who's locked in a feud with Mr. Trump over his recusal in the Russia investigation. The Department of Justice pointed instead to Press Secretary Sarah Sanders' remarks, calling the author a gutless loser. Despite the claims in the explosive editorial, the president reassured supporters he's fit for the job.
Correspondent Weijia Jiang reporting. On Tuesday, investigative journalist Bob Woodward's new book on President Trump is released. It's called Fear, and it describes the White House in chaos. President Trump calls it a scam. Correspondent David Martin has this report.
White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, who spends more time with the president than any other official, thinks he is unhinged, according to Woodward, who writes that in one small group meeting, Kelly said, he's an idiot. It's pointless to try and convince him of anything. He's gone off the rails. Responding Tuesday, Kelly called that account not true. Last year, Kelly said being chief of staff is the hardest job he's ever had.
It is not the best job I ever had.
Kelly is quoted by Woodward as repeating that sentiment, saying, we're in crazy town. This is the worst job I've ever had.
He's very thrilled not to see rockets going over Japan.
According to Woodward, Defense Secretary James Mattis told close associates the president acted like and had the understanding of a fifth or sixth grader.
The barbaric killing of small and helpless children and babies must be forcefully rejected.
After the president saw video of the aftermath of a poison gas attack on Syrian civilians in April 2017, he called Mattis and, according to Woodward, fumed, let's expletive kill him, referring to Syria's dictator Bashar al-Assad. Mattis said he would get right on it, but told a senior aide, we're not going to do any of that. In a statement, Mattis said those words were never uttered by me. According to Woodward, the president also refers to his attorney general as mentally retarded, and also, according to Woodward, said, he's this dumb southerner. Tuesday evening, the president denied that account, adding that Woodward made this up to divide. Earlier in the day, speaking to the Daily Caller, President Trump claimed Woodward had a lot of credibility problems, and on Twitter wondered whether Woodward is a Democratic operative. Woodward tried, but was not granted an interview with Mr. Trump, and in a brief phone conversation last month, Woodward warned him what was coming.
It's a tough look at the world and your administration and you.
Right. Well, I assume that means it's going to be a negative book.
David Martin reporting. A new threat from the president of more tariffs on China sent stocks tumbling Friday.
President Trump says that China is taking $5 billion from the U.S. economy every year, and he can't let that happen. On Air Force One Friday, Mr. Trump told reporters.
Well, we've taxed them $50 billion. That's on technology. Now we've added another $200 billion. And I hate to say this, but behind that, there's another $267 billion ready to go on short notice if I want.
The president says the tariffs are working. China's economy is suffering because of them. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
To Capitol Hill now, during 3 days of testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee, Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh refused to bow to Democratic pressure on his opinions on issues like abortion rights and presidential power. But tensions culminated Thursday when Democrats released previously confidential records from Kavanaugh.
There's no classified documents here.
Do you want to give up your emails right now? Make them public? I don't think you do.
Democrat Cory Booker dared to face disciplinary action from the Senate for publicly releasing material the committee labeled confidential.
I hope that they will bring charges against us. And I'm ready to accept the full responsibility.
Senator Dianne Feinstein questioned Judge Kavanaugh about a previously confidential email he wrote in 2003 while working in the George W. Bush White House. It said, I'm not sure that all legal scholars refer to Roe as the settled law of the land at the Supreme Court level, since court can always overrule its precedent, and three current justices on the court would do so.
This has been viewed as you saying that you don't think Roe is settled.
I'm always concerned with accuracy, and I thought that was not quite accurate description of all legal scholars.
Senators revisited whether Judge Kavanaugh had discussed special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. He said he hasn't.
I've never given anyone any hints, forecasts, previews, winks, nothing.
Into it. I don't know whether people understand.
A steady stream of protesters continued to interrupt the proceedings as they did during the first 2 days. Mololenghi, CBS News, the Capitol.
Now to Afghanistan, where new attacks in recent days have killed dozens of people, including two Afghan journalists. Correspondent Charlie Daggett has more from Kabul.
Emergency workers and journalists became victims when a car bomb blew up. Sergeant Major Timothy Bolyard gave up his life in an effort to stop that kind of violence. He was shot dead by an Afghan police officer. He came here to train as part of his mission. It was his seventh overseas deployment, 6 bronze medals, 2 for valor. It followed another insider attack that killed 20-year-old Corporal Joseph Maciel in July.
Charlie Daggett reporting from Kabul. Coming up, why part of Tesla's value in the stock market went up in smoke Friday. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Members of Congress grilled executives at two of the world's top social media platforms Wednesday.
Nearly 2 years after the 2016 elections, Facebook and Twitter executives told a Senate panel their companies were not properly equipped to stop misinformation campaigns on their platforms.
We were too slow to spot this and too slow to act.
We found ourselves unprepared and ill-equipped for the immensity of the problems that we've acknowledged.
Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg and Twitter's Jack Dorsey said they learned from the past and that they are coordinating with other social media companies and law enforcement to stop bad actors.
Finding inauthentic behavior is a challenge, and I think you're seeing us put real resources to bear.
Dorsey said Twitter has suspended over 3,000 accounts believed to be linked to the same Russian internet agency identified in special counsel Robert Mueller's indictment.
Google was also invited to the Senate hearing but declined the invitation.
Alex Jones, host of the now-canceled web program InfoWars, attended the hearing as a spectator.
The real election meddling is by Facebook and Google and others that are shadow-banning people, that are outright-banning people.
Dorsey was pressed on Twitter banned while appearing solo before a House panel later in the day.
Our policies and our algorithms don't take into consideration any affiliation, philosophy, or viewpoint.
Dorsey testified thousands of accounts, including some lawmakers, were inadvertently caught in its filtering algorithm. Nicole Killian, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Jack Dorsey, no relation to me. Nike is facing backlash from some customers after the sportswear company featured former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick in an ad campaign.
Throwing this in the fire because of Colin Kaepernick is now the face of Nike.
Some lit their Nike shoes on fire, sharing the video on social media.
Sorry, Nike. I've been buying you for the past 20-plus years. Not anymore.
It's part of Nike's 30th anniversary of its Just Do It campaign, but it's not sitting well with some Nike fans. Susie Burkhart says you won't find her sporting the swoosh.
I thought about it this morning and last night when I was getting ready to decide what I was going to wear. I chose not to wear it. I'm not wearing any Nike.
Kaepernick became a divisive figure when he began kneeling during the national anthem in 2016, protesting police brutality and racial injustice. He's been unsigned since then and tangled in a lawsuit with the NFL, accusing the league of illegally shutting him out. Juan Ugarte is among fans backing Kaepernick.
I think it's part of the American experience to be able to speak your mind freely. I see it as a respectful way to say how you feel.
Stars including Serena Williams have also come out in support, tweeting, "Especially proud to be a part of the Nike family today." Shares of Nike dropped nearly 3% in trading. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Pasadena, California.
Film legend Burt Reynolds died Thursday at age 82 at a hospital in Florida.
He acted in more than 90 movies and hundreds of TV episodes. But if you need proof that Burt Reynolds was a cultural icon, how about his mention in a Bruce Springsteen song? Reynolds driving a Trans Am in Smokey and the Bandit, just one of his many good old Southern boy roles that made him a box office star in the 1970s and 80s.
Oh, talk to me, good buddy.
But Reynolds also had range. He could play tough in cop dramas or romantic, as he did in Starting Over.
You know anybody I can go out with now?
Career highlights included 1972's Deliverance, hailed by the critics, the CBS sitcom Evening Shade, which won him an Emmy, and 97's Boogie Nights. Reynolds received an Oscar nomination for playing a porn filmmaker.
Listen up, kid. Listen up. I'm going to try to do this all in one shot.
Not bad for a kid who stumbled into acting after an injury killed off his pro football ambitions. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Comedian Sacha Baron Cohen faces a new lawsuit.
Failed U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore is suing comedian Sacha Baron Cohen for defamation for tricking him into appearing on his just-wrapped Showtime series, Who is America? It featured Cohen in disguise as an Israeli anti-terror expert.
It turns out the sex offenders, and particularly pedophiles, secrete an enzyme 4-DDHT.
The Cohen character used a fake pedophile detector that beeped when it waved over Moore. Variety says he's suing for $95 million. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Showtime's owned by CBS. Tesla's stock fell sharply Friday after billionaire CEO Elon Musk was shown smoking pot on a popular podcast hosted by comedian Joe Rogan.
A host passed Musk a joint of pot and tobacco.
Yeah, I think I tried one once.
Come on, man. You probably can't because of stockholders, right?
I mean, it's legal, right?
It's totally legal.
Okay.
Later in the show, Musk said he was getting texts from friends asking him what he was doing. He says he rarely smokes pot because it hurts his productivity. Some people speculated he was smoking it when he tweeted about taking Tesla private. He says he wasn't. Peter King, CBS News.
The Department of Justice has charged a North Korean man with a 2014 Sony Pictures hack. The U.S. alleges Park Jin-yeok was a member of a cyber hacking ring sponsored by the North Korean government, U.S. Attorney Tracy Wilkinson.
From our information, Park is in North Korea and there is no extradition treaty with North Korea. However, the Department of Justice has a long arm and a long memory, and we would be fully prepared for a day when he is arrested.
The U.S. says Park also helped unleash the WannaCry ransomware virus that infected computers in 150 countries, crippling parts of the U.K. health system. The Academy of Motion Pictures says it will not introduce the criticized new popular film category.
The Motion Picture Academy had come under criticism for what some felt was lowering the bar. Now the Academy says everything's on hold. It will not present the award at next year's show. It says the proposed category merits further study.
CBS's Steve Futterman reporting from L.A. A former actor on The Cosby Show criticized for his job is offered a new role.
An actor on The Cosby Show who was job-shamed for working at a grocery store says every job is worthwhile and valuable. Jeffrey Owens played Elvin Thibodeau on the hit show. He said on ABC's Good Morning America he's grateful for the support he's received since photos of him working at a New Jersey Trader Joe's surfaced. He said the unwanted attention led him to quit the job, though he championed its merits. But now he might have a new position. Tyler Perry tweeted he wants Owens to join him on his TV show, The Haves and Have-Nots. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
Kim Kardashian continues her campaign for prison sentencing reform.
In an appearance on the Jason Flom Wrongful Conviction podcast, the New York Post reports Kim Kardashian says she's been speaking with Chris Young, a man sentenced to life in prison for marijuana and cocaine possession. The 30-year-old was arrested in 2010, and Kim says his sentence is unfair. Kardashian helped get Alice Johnson pardoned in June, who had been given a life sentence for a drug deal. In this case, she says she spoke to the judge who sentenced Young, who resigned because he, quote, had never been on the side of having to do something so unfair. She also says she regularly speaks with President Trump and his son-in-law and aide, Jared Kushner. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Kardashian met with Ivanka Trump at the White House Wednesday. Up next, why you may want to wash your hands more often at the airport.
Airport security is designed to keep us safe, but experts say it can also pose a health risk.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
From the Capital One Bank studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
As kids return to school, elevated levels of lead and copper have been found in dozens of Detroit public schools.
There are higher levels of copper or lead, not just in Detroit, but throughout this country.
A few months after taking the helm of Detroit's public schools, Nikolai Viti began seeing the outlines of a health emergency. Testing of every water fountain and fixture began in June. In August, VT learned 34 out of 50 schools tested so far had harmful levels of lead or copper.
Any level of exposure to lead to children is dangerous.
That's right, and we're not testing. So this has been an awakening for me as superintendent.
The Government Accountability Office reported 57% of U.S. school districts either didn't test their water for lead or were unsure if they did. Tests are mandatory in at least 7 states, but no federal law requires them. Bottled water and water coolers are being provided, which will cost about $200,000 over the next few months.
That's putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound.
Ricky Rice worries about his 3 grandchildren in Detroit public schools.
I'm willing to give them time to fix their problem, but if they drag their feet, something's going to be said and something has to be done.
VT says the long-term solution is to install new water stations with their own piping systems in every school.
I don't think it's realistic to think that we can just change the plumbing infrastructure in schools.
As far as school lunches are concerned, district officials say that all cafeteria meals are prepared off-site. And while sinks and showers remain operational, officials say that they are safe as long as no one drinks from them. Michelle Miller, CBS News, Detroit.
On Wednesday, dozens of people on a plane arriving at JFK prompted a health scare there.
When Emirates Airlines Flight 203 landed at JFK, dozens of ambulances and other emergency vehicles were waiting.
Everyone waiting for us. Thanks for helping.
Yeah, you're going to stop on stop position 2.
The pilots were ordered not to go to the gate by the Centers for Disease Control after dozens of passengers had reported feeling ill with flu-like symptoms in flight. The Airbus A380 with over 500 passengers on board was isolated from the terminal. Many on board wondered what was going on and posted pictures and videos on social media, including the rapper Vanilla Ice, who spoke to the blast.
They came in with paramedics and everything. They checked our temperature. They made us fill out a health report. And I'm just like, wow, what is going on?
Medical staff checked every passenger and crew member before letting them off the plane. Of the 100 originally complaining of symptoms, 10 were sent to a hospital, 7 of them crew members, and 9 refused medical care. The rest went on their way.
It was just gross.
Aaron Sykes had noticed many passengers were ill before takeoff.
Food poisoning was originally suspected as being the cause, but officials are now looking at the possibility that some of the passengers were already infected with the flu virus when they got on board. Some of them had been visiting Mecca, where there is currently a flu outbreak. Don Daler, CBS News, JFK Airport.
A warning about handling airport security bins.
Airport security is designed to keep us safe, but experts say it can also pose a health risk. Researchers examined surfaces all around the airport for flu and cold viruses. They discovered the trays at checkpoints are the most contaminated, even more than bathrooms. Not the kind of news Vanessa Gonzalez wanted to hear.
That's gross. I don't like that.
The findings are outlined in a new report. Scientists tested plastic security bins at Helsinki Airport in Finland during peak flu season. Half carried evidence of at least one respiratory virus.
A passenger has a virus and they breathe down into them. They can deposit a little bit of virus along with their shoes and their luggage into the bin.
Vanderbilt's Dr. William Schaffner says overall, the bins are not a major source of infection. Colds and flus are mostly spread through the air.
Somebody has the virus and breathes it out. I'm within 3 feet and I breathe it in. That's how these viruses are spread.
Experts say it's important to regularly wash your hands when you're traveling, advice Amy Wallace already follows.
I go to the bathroom, wash my hands if I'm traveling with my kids. I carry the little bottle-sized hand sanitizer.
Gonzalez also has a bottle ready to go.
You have to have hand sanitizer.
Researchers behind the study say airports should have sanitizer available at security to help make sure travelers don't bring a virus on their trip. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
New concerns about the role genetics play in stomach cancer. More from CBS News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John LaPook.
All right, break it down.
When Aaron Rosenberg's aunt, Alice Grossman, was diagnosed with a genetic form of stomach cancer 2 years ago, a look at his family tree set off alarm bells.
We said, oh, well, you know what? There was that second cousin who also had gastric cancer then. Oh, wait, there's a third cousin and another third cousin. So all of a sudden it's a, whoa.
Genetic testing revealed he carried a rare mutation that gave him a 55 to 70% chance of developing stomach cancer. His mother, Alice, also carries the mutation.
When I found out the news about me, my mother was very emotional and basically said to me that she was very sorry for passing this on to me.
Rosenberg then faced a decision. Do nothing and hope for the best, or do something dramatic, just like Angelina Jolie, who underwent a double mastectomy after testing positive for a gene that carries a 50% chance of breast cancer.
Wait, Eli wants to be
with a husband and two young boys at home, yeah. Rosenberg chose not to roll the dice. Last August, surgeons removed his stomach and connected his esophagus to the small intestine. Even though his stomach looked normal to the eye, a microscopic examination showed a surprise.
There were 14 sites of what was described to me as stage 1A cancer.
You were going to get stomach cancer. You were, in fact, developing it.
Right. Once the news sunk in, I literally just thought about the fact that my aunt had saved my life.
His aunt died in January. He's doing well, but has lost 30 pounds on a restricted diet of 7 or 8 small meals a day.
You normally would have had this.
This used to be his typical lunch. A salad platter with a whole bagel. Today, it's just a scoop of tuna fish.
When you look at this, is it like seeing a long-lost friend?
Seeing that favorite old pair of jeans?
Yeah.
Kinda.
Yeah. Are you going to eat that pickle?
Dr. John LaPook, CBS News, Los Angeles.
There could be new hope for folks struggling with knee pain.
The clinical trials aim to give people relief from knee pain without knee replacement.
Right now, we have nothing like this in our toolbox.
LSU Health New Orleans is the first U.S. site joining the international study.
We're finding that we can actually grow real cartilage in the knee, which we've never been able to do.
Dr. Vinod Dasa says the trials include coring out arthritic tissue.
If the research pans out the way we expect it to, this could really make a big difference for a lot of people.
They're accepting candidates for the clinical trials now. Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, the investigation into Catholic Church sex abuse expands. Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A vow from Britain to fight back against Russia.
The head of Britain's electronic spy agency vows to retaliate against what he calls the brazen Kremlin for the Novichok nerve agent attack on a former double agent and his daughter in Salisbury, England. Jeremy Fleming says GCHQ will deploy the full range of tools to counter the Russian threat. The British government reportedly plans to target the GRU, the Russian military intelligence agency, with offensive cyber warfare. Britain claims the GRU carried out the attempted assassination. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
More than a dozen people are dead after an earthquake struck Japan's northernmost island of Hokkaido Thursday. More from CBS News reporter Lucy Kraft in Tokyo.
This came in the middle of the night, local time. People were asleep. A lot of people probably were killed as they were sleeping.
Mexican authorities have discovered at least 166 bodies in a mass grave in Veracruz. CBS News reporter Adrian Bard has more from Mexico City.
The exact location of the mass grave hasn't been revealed for security reasons. It is the second largest grave of this kind found in the state of Veracruz in recent years. That state has become known as a place where drug traffickers execute and bury those who refuse to cooperate. Many of the victims are believed to be migrants from Central America on their way to the United States.
The Catholic Diocese in New York State say they're reviewing civil subpoenas by the Attorney General there into the sexual abuse of children. It comes after Pope Francis spoke out recently about the scandal.
Silencio e preghiera.
Silence and prayer, that's what Pope Francis recommended to followers Monday at a daily mass as a response to those who only seek scandal, who seek only division, who seek only destruction even within the family. His comments come after a former Vatican official, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, claims the Pope was aware of sexual abuse allegations against former Washington Cardinal Theodore McCarrick for 5 years before asking him to resign in July. Silence and prayer clearly isn't enough for some Catholics. A protester interrupted Washington Archbishop Donald Worrell's Sunday Mass as the Cardinal asked for loyalty to the Pope. Worrell himself came under fire after a Pennsylvania grand jury report last month revealed more than 300 Catholic priests abused more than 1,000 children over 70 years across six state dioceses.
I wish I could do everything for these 30 years.
Worrell oversaw the Pittsburgh diocese during the time several abuses occurred, but he was not accused of misconduct. We spoke with the Cardinal last month.
What does Pope Francis need to do? Purify the Catholic Church.
There was an abuse, too many abuses, but I think they're being dealt with. What we just saw here was an extremely rapid response by Pope Francis.
University of Birmingham theology professor Canada Moss.
Discontent and ill feeling in the church has gotten to such a fever pitch that people are discussing this as a potential moment of civil war in the American church.
In a statement, Cardinal Worrell said Pope Francis is the object of a concentrated attack. So far, Pope Francis has not responded directly to Vigano's allegations. Nikki Batiste, CBS News, New York.
Investigators are probing how a fire started Sunday in Brazil's National Museum in Rio de Janeiro that destroyed millions of priceless artifacts.
Firefighters have been carrying charred items out of the museum, trying to rescue what remains. Local officials say it's likely that most of the museum's 20 million artifacts were destroyed when the museum went up in flames on Sunday. The museum held Latin America's largest collection of historical artifacts, including a skull believed to be 11,000 years old and a number of Egyptian mummies. On Monday, hundreds of protesters tried to storm through the gates in front of the museum. They were met by police officers armed with pepper spray and batons. This person says, "What I feel is more anger than sadness because it could be avoided." Protesters blame the government for neglecting the building and not making necessary improvements over the years. Government officials say the museum will be rebuilt. Hillary Lane, CBS News.
An ancient statue is on its way back home.
A 2,000-year-old statue of the goddess of love, Aphrodite, stolen from Greece's Santorini Museum, has been recovered. Greek police say a man who was allegedly trying to sell the 31-inch marble work was arrested in the seaside town of Loutraki. Two other Greek men have been identified as suspected accomplices. Earlier this year, a museum watchman and another suspect were arrested for stealing antiquities from the museum's storage area. About 20 stone and pottery artifacts were recovered. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
A Bangkok, Thailand mall is hosting an interactive experience on the cave rescue of a boys' soccer team there.
The young soccer players turned celebrities climbed out of a mock exhibit of a narrow cave with smiles on their faces as they recalled their real escape in northern Thailand nearly 2 months ago. 15-year-old Ekarat said, "I'd like to thank everybody all over the world, my friends and the Navy SEALs who helped us." The interactive showcase inside a popular mall in Bangkok details efforts international divers made to save the boys. Visitors can see dive suits search teams wore and wrap themselves in thermal blankets like the boys use to stay warm. Team captain, 12-year-old Dom, says he now has about 300,000 Instagram followers. The team was trapped in the flooded cave for almost 2 weeks before search crews found them and launched an elaborate rescue plan. The exhibit also features a statue remembering the former Navy SEAL diver who died installing oxygen tanks along the treacherous escape route. The team's coach, who took the boys into the complex before floodwaters hit, has since become a monk. He says the lesson for everyone is to be mindful of what you're doing, because anything can happen in life. Tina Kraus, CBS News.
Back home, forecasters in the eastern half of the U.S. are keeping an eye on several storm systems, including the remnants of Tropical Storm Gordon.
Once Tropical Storm Gordon will continue to dump heavy rain through the weekend across the midsection of the country. Flood watches are posted in 9 states. Benny Sims has been helping flood victims outside Jackson, Mississippi.
Trying to help the elderly people out here keep their houses from getting flooded. You know, let them save what they do have already.
Some parts of the Mid-South and Midwest could see 6 inches or more of rain from Gordon's leftovers merging with the stalled storm system. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
Meanwhile, Hurricane Florence could make landfall along the East Coast by the end of the week. A judge has ruled for homeless folks in Boise, Idaho.
Bedding down on Boise streets is not a crime. The 3-judge appeals court ruled that prosecuting people for sleeping outdoors if they have nowhere else to go violates their constitutional rights because it amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. The ruling could affect several other cities across the western USA, and it comes as growing income inequality and rising housing costs push ever more people in the region into homelessness. Vicki Barker, CBS News.
Coming up, how some underwater gardening may help rebuild the Great Barrier Reef.
100 corals have been grown in an underwater nursery.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
If you like this podcast, check out what other podcasts are available from CBS News Radio.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt.
Climate's changing. We contribute to it. I've said that 1,000 times, okay?
Chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Tom Perez.
That's what this president has always been about. He divides people.
Samantha Bee, our very special guest.
I think I just realized my voice is really boring on podcasts. I'm sorry, everyone.
Not at all. Subscribe now for a new podcast every Friday morning. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A planned grizzly hunt is sparking controversy.
There's going to be cubs that are orphaned.
Wildlife photographer Tom Mangelson secured one of the 22 Wyoming permits granted to hunters. His goal, to prevent at least one hunter from killing the animals.
Bears are so special to all these people. This may be the only bear they get to see their whole lives. Now, if a hunter takes that bear, he robs that experience from literally millions of people.
2 days before Wyoming and Idaho were set to open their first grizzly hunts in more than 40 years, a federal judge issued a 14-day restraining order, saying the threat of death to individual grizzly bears posed by the scheduled hunt is sufficient to justify a delay. Wildlife managers are asking the judge to allow the killing of 22 bears in Wyoming and one in Idaho to control the population and eliminate what they say is a threat to humans and livestock.
I mean, they are very dangerous and they can do a lot of damage.
Taylor Ingham is a licensed guide for the grizzly hunts. He argues that because of successful conservation efforts, there are now too many grizzlies in the wild.
Since the 1970s, I mean, the state of Wyoming has spent tens of millions of dollars to bring these bears back to the population that they are. And it's a success story, you know, that we can have a hunting season based on the strong population that we have now.
The National Park Service estimates that the grizzly bear population in and around Yellowstone increased from 136 in 1975 to an estimated 757 in 2014. But recently, the number has dropped to around 700. Mangelson argues the population has not grown significantly due in part to climate change's effect on habitat. He and other environmentalists want the bears to be put back on the endangered species list. The animals were removed last year.
Predators kill, you know, the weak and the sick, and we don't. We take the biggest bucks and the biggest bears, and it's sort of anti-natural selection.
A decision on the fate of the hunt could come by mid-September. Stan Bush, Jackson, Wyoming.
A bit of underwater gardening is offering new hope to Australia's Great Barrier Reef.
Green thumbs in the deep blue, a simple idea mimicking nature that could help speed up the Great Barrier Reef's recovery.
So we take some pieces of healthy coral from the reef, we cut those into small pieces, they hang on these underwater Christmas trees.
In a similar way to native tree plantings, 100 corals have been grown in an underwater nursery. Researchers say that allows the coral fragments to focus on growing without having to fight off algae attacks, other corals and pests.
They grow, you know, up to 7 times faster on the trees than they do on the reef.
Researchers then place the corals back in the reef near Fitzroy Island using a special underwater glue, regenerating damaged sections with new life.
We've lost about 50% since the early 1980s, and even in the last 3 years we've lost an enormous amount of coral.
But scale is one of the biggest challenges.
You look at the size of the Great Barrier Reef, and while not all of it's coral, the whole place is as big as Italy. And so you know, really what you're trying to do is to grow vegetable patches all over, Italy.
That will be a focus for the Reef Restoration Foundation, which is aiming to grow 25,000 new corals by 2021.
And how we can then expand it to other sites and other locations across the Great Barrier Reef.
Who knows, this sort of out-of-the-box thinking could contribute to the solution.
A small success which could bring back big colour to our natural wonder.
Network 10's Amber Austin Wright reporting. The FBI says a pair of ruby slippers used in The Wizard of Oz has been recovered. Here's correspondent Lee Cowan.
It was the kind of caper that would make your toes curl.
They're gone.
Talk about walking in someone else's shoes.
Give me back my slippers. I'm the only one that knows how to use them.
Memorabilia collector Michael Shaw understood the Wicked Witch of the West's pain. After all, his pair of ruby slippers was ripped off too.
My knees buckled when I was on the phone, and the shoes were stolen. And the only thing I could blurt out was get them back.
He'd loaned them to the Judy Garland Museum in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. But in 2005, someone broke in and made off with them on a magic broom or something. They just disappeared.
Well, they're more than just a pair of shoes, the slippers. They're an enduring symbol of the power of belief.
For 13 long years, the museum had replicas in their place. Like the man behind the curtain, no one saw the originals again.
Now, under the rainbow.
The FBI finally found them, one of only 4 known pairs, authenticating them by comparing them to the ones in the Smithsonian.
It turns out they're not only intact, they are as pristine, I was told, as when I put them on display. So, yay!
Not only were these slippers stolen, but the memories of a lot of Americans were stolen back in 2005.
Authorities aren't saying how they got them back, other than it involved a sting operation set up to bust an extortion plot. They've made no arrests, but vow to hunt down whoever is responsible with the same tenacity as the Wicked Witch of the West.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Maybe they'll leave the dog out. We count. Hollywood.
Finally this week in the wisdom of WALL-E.
Oh!
The first lesson of the day for students at Marina Village Middle School happens well before class.
Give me a smile.
Every morning, 94-year-old WALL-E Richardson greets parents with a wave.
Morning! Yay!
And their kids with what he calls WALL-E-isms.
Okay, be kind whenever possible.
It's always possible.
You give these kids a fist bump every day?
Yeah, I call it a knuckle. Some of them do it like this. No.
After the knuckles, the 80-year age difference seems to disappear.
Judging others does not define who they are.
It defines who you are.
The ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are built for, right?
What's the point of getting them to participate?
Oh, I want them to retain something that they can take on into life later on.
But his own life experiences make him an expert on what kids won't find in a textbook. He joined the Navy in World War II, was a fighter pilot in the Korean War, then flew for United Airlines. But this is WALL-E's work now.
He's like one of the nicest adults that I've ever met.
It all started 15 years ago when WALL-E was on his daily walk. He likes to teach life lessons to kids this age before they become too cool to listen.
All it takes is one significant adult in someone's life, and you can impact them forever. And WALL-E is that person for a lot of kids.
Be kind whenever possible.
It's always possible.
If they can be kind and loving to other people throughout life, they won't have any trouble getting by.
And as WALL-E would say, knowing what's right doesn't mean much unless you do what's right.
Hi, WALL-E.
Carter Evans, CBS News, El Dorado Hills, California.
Okay.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show is always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.